You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
All right, welcome back to the Gay Florida Man. We've got a great episode today for you. We're going to be talking about receiving an orientation. And I know that's a common thing when people don't know a lot about prison, then they hear about people that get sent to prison. Well, what happens? So let's start from the beginning. You decide that you're tired of your wife, so you decide to bash her head in, you run over the neighbor, or you get drunk and you hit a school bus full of kids and you kill them all. So the court frowns on that sort of thing. So what happens is they'll usually find you guilty and then you get sent off to prison. Now, nobody wants to go to prison, but one of the highlights about working in a prison is I get to meet you and you get to meet me, and you also get to meet Officer Sean, one of the people that I worked with for several years, and we had an absolute blast, was Officer Sean, who is joining us today as we talk about receiving an orientation when you come to prison. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Talking about receiving on Florida Gay Man sounds interesting. I'm not super familiar with that.
We'll get to the terminology of tops and bottoms and bears and bear cubs and otters. We'll get to all of that at a later podcast. But today we're going to focus on receiving an orientation when you come into prison, kind of the process and some of the stories that we've dealt with. I know for a lot of people you don't know. So you come into prison, depending on what you're charged with or what you got convicted of, rather, you come in and it's a lot of people are really scared if it's their first time. And just for the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to break it down to those guys that have been there and then those guys that are new to the prison environment. There's a whole bunch of different classifications, old number, new charge, people that have served time in other states. But just for the purposes of the podcast, you've got people that are new to prison and the guys that keep coming back, and they know the routine. Anyways, we worked in a really old building, and it's part of the Uinta complex inside the state prison. And in a few years, it probably won't even be there because they're moving the prison out towards the airport there in Utah. Sean, how did you end up coming to work at the prison?
Desperation. I was active Mormon when I started working at the prison, and I had gone on a mission and came back and got married and had a daughter all within like a year and a half. And wow. I was working in collections, and the insurance wasn't great. So I had three relatives and a few other people I knew that worked at the prison, and it had good benefits. I thought, what the hell, let's go work at the prison. Pays better than collections, and I can take care of my kid.
Okay, so you put in your application. You said, okay, I'm going to do this. I want better health insurance. So you put in an application. Your thoughts, your experience, the academy, 3 months of your life running and doing the tactics and the legal part of the training academy. As you look back, what do you remember? Like, what did you think?
Oh God. Part of it was interesting because it was nice working out and running, you know, but in the same breath, like there were some interesting types there. A trucker that actually got kicked out for threatening to shoot one of the instructors in the face. that was fun. And I was going through it at a time when they had just gotten a new, not a director, but the guy in charge of our group that was super military, which is not talking about the military, but Utah correctional officers definitely do not understand formation, nor will they practice formation enough. So to be able to get good at it, this guy's obsessed with us having stand in formation, practice it. And actually, when we did the graduation ceremony, we had a bunch of other departments that weren't actually Utah Department of Corrections there with us. And so they'd only gone through the first 6 weeks of training and then left. And this guy's big idea was for us to have do an about face at the end of our graduation ceremony. He's out there leading it. Everyone goes about face. My friend, who's a Marine, is watching this, and he's like, this is pathetic. And then half of our class turns one way, and the other half goes the other way. For the actual people from the military that were there, oh my God, it was fucking embarrassing. I was so embarrassed for us as well. Dude, I don't have a lot of words besides I knew in the academy that this wasn't something I was going to do long term, and I was getting in to go to school and get out. And the prison gave me that and some interesting stories, and I got to meet you. So overall, worth it. Yeah, I wouldn't go back to save my life.
Well, that's was it the TAC officer that wanted you to do the formation?
No, the TAC officer. So that you had the TAC officer, which was the actual captain from the prison, right?
Okay.
And then they had director like captain. It wasn't him. There was some other staff. It was an actual academy staff.
Okay.
Like the lone TAC officers. I don't remember who it was. I was just like, what the fuck are we doing?
So people kind of get an idea on how the academy is structured. You have people that work at the academy, and you get different people from they got to get certified throughout the state, you know, all the different county jail employees, jailers from all over the state, and then your Utah Department of Corrections employees, they all go through. So you'll have a class, and you might have somebody from Davis County, from Utah County, from, you know, all these different areas of the state with the Utah Department of Corrections people all getting trained at the same time, going through this whole process. And so you have a TAC officer who is meets with you every day and gives you guidance. And that's somebody from the prison that's assigned to your class. And then he or she will go back to work in the prison once the academy class graduates. The staff that work there at the academy, they're full-time. And all they do is the training in service for people that are currently certified that have to be recertified every year to maintain their certification. And then the pre-service training as well. They handle all of it. You graduate from the academy, and then you come down and you work in the prison. So you walk in, that's got to be overwhelming. It was for me. You walk in and you're like, holy shit, I am like surrounded by all these people that are all felons. And I mean, it's got to be overwhelming for you, right?
Yeah, it was a little bit. It was like stepping into a whole new world. And it was interesting because the inmates, they immediately start testing you, right? Like you're still there and you're like academy polo looking like a dork when you first start touring the place. And so immediately people are like, hey, what fresh meat? And they start just calling random shit at you about like, hey, I bet your wife's pretty, or like, you look like you just barely graduated elementary school. How the fuck are you going to do anything with us? You know, so they immediately start testing you. And, you know, I'm freaking still pretty active Mormon, don't swear. And I'm like, good golly, I don't know. So
gee,
I wasn't.
Gee willikers.
Yeah, gee willikers. My goodness.
So you're going through all this and like you're hearing things you've never heard before, like, you know, hey, go home and fuck your mother, you know, and all this stuff that they scream at you. I remember there was one particular sergeant that was hated in our building, or at least when I started, he was in that building. He used to walk down the corridor, and this dude would set inmates off, and he was miserable to work with. And they would call out his name and they say, hey, can I piss in your butt? And they'd scream it from a section. And so you understand this building. It's a real old building. And you have this long hallway. You have the control room at the front of the building where staff come in and new intakes come in through these grates, these big metal barred doors on sliders. And you look down this long hallway to the very end, which is the back dock. And you have sections on either side. And there's Alpha, Baker, Charlie, Delta on the left. And then Echo, Fox, Golf, and Hotel on the right. And at night, if it gets loud, again, it's all bars. It's a really old part of the prison, so it can get really loud. And they scream to each other across the sections. Hey, Bob, hey, are you in here? Hey, man, fuck, when are we going to see each other, man? But I hope we get housed together, all this stupid shit. And so you're dealing with this noise, and sometimes it can get out of control.
Yeah, sometimes it's entertaining, but generally it can get out of control.
Yeah. I mean, we worked together on night shift the whole time that I was in that building. And you started out on swings when I first met you, Sean.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. And then eventually you switched over to Graveyard Shift when there was an available spot. And it's cool because Sean and I became really good friends as a result of spending a lot more time together and watching YouTube and movies and inappropriate shit all night long and just laughing the whole time. It made for the shift to go by really fast. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. That definitely got me through the last few years I was there for sure.
Yeah. And so you were going to school the whole time that you were in, that you worked for the department.
Pretty much. I think I was there 5 years. And so the last 4 years I was going to school full time. And so the swing shift was great because I got my classes done and then I came to work. And then for the last couple of years, I had to take some evening classes or like afternoon classes. So switching to the graveyard shift, I would work all night, sleep for an hour, go to class, sleep for another couple hours, and then just return and repeat for forever. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I would probably die now. I don't understand how I went through sleep deprivation like that, but you know, I'm getting older.
it's amazing because you've really done well, and it's a good thing you got out because you're doing great now, which is awesome. Yeah, so the things that happen on a daily basis, and I know that Sean and I can talk for hours about the experiences that we had in UNF5, and you never know when that phone rings or when that radio starts to chirp. You don't know what's going to come across. It could be a problem in another building, and because we're working part of maximum security, you could have the potential for a lot of violence.
Yeah, you can.
And so at times it's fun, at times it's not so fun. And I know when you get these guys that come in, like adult probation parole might pick some guy up that's been on the run, or the marshals bring somebody back to Utah that was caught in another state. There's just a whole list of things. And when somebody comes in, you have this whole process. They've got to be screened by medical. You've got to do their inventory. You've got to strip search them. There's just
hashtag Mark's favorite part.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, time for you to strip, you know. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Don't worry about it, guys. I got this part. So some of the situations that we experienced that you remember, that the highlights of your 5 years in the time that you were in RNO. I know I can think of a few situations that we had. Were you there the one time the guy, one of the inmates, I think he was in Charlie's section, had assaulted the hall worker? He wanted the hall worker, which was a new dude, but he was trying to get him to bring him something that he was not allowed to have. And the guy wouldn't do it. The trustee wouldn't do it. And so he threw chemicals on him. Do you remember?
Yeah, I believe I was in the control room that night.
And so we ended up getting the guy out of the section. The other dude getting him seen by medical because he got exposed to chemicals, bring the dude that did the assault and put him in the holding cell. I think that the guy wanted to be moved anyways, but he's in this holding cell and he's being a total fucking dick. And I try to talk to him and I'm asking him about, you know, what his motivation, or, you know, trying to get him to just cuff up so we can end up moving him, because the guy's not going to stay in UNF5. He said something about, I'm playing games, and I don't know what he's talking about. I said something that irritated him, so he cleared his throat. He and I said, that's different. You normally swallow. And the fucking guy went off. At that point, he was not going to talk to me anymore, and he was trying to spit on me, and I got the hell out of Dodge. And we ended up having to bring in the SWAT team, got called in to move the guy. But as soon as the SWAT team came in, and, you know, they're all wearing their camouflage, and all those dudes do is train and lift weights all day, and they live for this shit. But they're not very happy because they get called in from home. It's later at night, and they go to pull this guy out of the cell, and he's like, whatever you need, guys, whatever you need. I'm just here to do whatever you tell me to do. And so they bitch walked him from that building over to UNF1, which basically means they hold his hands down and he's restrained behind his back with a leash and shackles on his feet with another leash. And they walk him backwards from our building over to UNF1. I ended up seeing the guy on the news like a year later. Of course, he had paroled and was high on meth in somebody's apartment doing some crazy shit as normal.
Oh, but I thought it was just going to be someone else that had murdered someone. So
that you know, we see that too. But so tell me like a story that you remember from your time there. Like it doesn't even have to be on the shift with me, but just a story that stands out that you remember from your time.
I think one of my favorite stories actually was we had so the prison, you obviously have to have committed a felony, so a year or more time to go to prison.
Right.
And so we would have guys that get booked at the jails and then they would come over to us. They get held there while they're before they're transferred over to us. We had this huge group. I forget from what county. This guy came in and he's just being a fucking prick. I'm like, does anybody like this guy? And apparently not, because all of a sudden a handful of we had a phone call. And the prison said, hey, or the jail they had come from said, hey, there's a guy there that has a key that he keistered. All the inmates here hated him, so they wanted us to let you know that he was bragging about it before he left. And so we go into this section, the holding cell, where there's like 30 guys. And we're like, hey, come over here, cuff up.
And hey, so Sean, can I ask you one thing? What is keistered for somebody that, you know, wouldn't know?
Oh, shoving shit up your ass so that you can keep it for safekeeping. Usually in a balloon, because if it's something you want to eat, you don't want to have that taste on whatever was stuffed up there.
true that.
Yes. So we pull him out. We ask him if he's got anything up his butt, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I had to take him over to the infirmary and got to stand there while he got his x-rays. And it was awesome because he's standing next to us. We're literally watching the image appear, and there's just a fucking his pelvis with his key floating in it. And we're like, you wow. sure you don't have anything up there? And he's like, fuck. And so so he goes into a dry cell, which is this cell you're in buck ass naked, and you have to shit in a bucket until whatever's up your keister comes out. And then some unlucky bastard of an officer has to, you know, bag it and squish it and see if they can find whatever they're looking for. Thank God I got to go back. They found someone to take my spot over there and watch that guy in the cell like 5 minutes before he shit. As I'm walking back to you in a fight from the infirmary, someone else is getting to dig through it and find the key. So that's probably one of my most favorite, because it's just kind of fun to watch a key get shown up on an x-ray.
Wow. You know, there's so many different stories that happen throughout the prison, and Arno's great just because you have a little bit of everything. I mean, everybody comes through that building prior to being classified. When you get classified, they determine based on your security level, like your threat to escape and your threat to other inmates, whether you have a gang affiliation. They classify you based on where you have to be housed, whether it be general population, maximum security. They look at, you know, what you're going to be ordered to do while you're there, whether it be finish your schooling, like your high school diploma, if you have to do sex offender therapy, if you've got substance abuse issues. And of course, you're going to be put in an area of the prison, basically, so you can meet all those requirements before you would ever be eligible to parole out. Sean experienced one of the greatest experiences as far as my 20 years in prison. Sean and I worked together on one of the coolest events. I mean, I say cool because a lot of times people don't realize prison can be really mundane. I mean, we watched a lot of movies together and a lot of videos and stuff to make the time pass. You know, when the shit hits the fan, it really hits the fan. And the time I'm talking about is the fire and echo section.
That was so fun. And I tell people that, and people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, you have no idea. I walk around once an hour during the middle of the night to see if people are sleeping or not. It's fucking ridiculous. So a fire was fantastic.
So what happens, and Sean, jump in if I get a detail wrong, because it has been a while. Down in Echo Section, we had an individual where he was a level 2 inmate. So
it was already, it was Fox, because Echo was the one right before it. And Echo had its own story with this. So it was Fox.
Fox, I thought, was where the guy had breathing problems.
No, because it was Fox was the fire, and then Echo was that other asshole that the water.
Oh, I thought, okay, I got it reversed, but
yeah, so, good, whatever.
So what happens is it's real quiet, and I'm in the office, and the office is down this little hallway off the corridor to the right. And I had come out of the office because I don't know what prompted me coming out, probably just walking to the bathroom, which was across the hall, like to this other hallway. So I had come out and I looked down the corridor, and there's, you know, a little bit of talking. You can hear guys talking. The average, would you say that like the average occupancy was about 120 to 130 people at a time?
Yeah, in that around building? There. Yep.
Yeah. Fluctuates every day based on who gets moved out and who comes in.
It was packed at that point.
Right.
Which is why we had a fire. So
I step out in the corridor and I look down the corridor and I see this mist. And one of the things that the inmates do when they're bored is they get in fights with baby powder, or they use baby powder to cover up the smell of smoke if they get some tobacco, or they, like Sean had said, they keister, they shove it up their ass. They know they're coming back to prison. And so I look down this hall. I'm like, you know, so I start walking down towards this mist. And when I get close to the end, I see this large pool of water.
Well, hold on. Like, so yes, but I was sitting in the office and I just remember you're so calm looking at this and you go, "Hey, Evans." And I'm like, "Yeah, what?" You're like, "Come here." And I remember turning that corner. "Do you see something down there?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what the hell is that?" Yeah, and then we both walked down there together.
Okay. And so we walked down there, and as we get to the front of the section, and it's on the right side, and we look in the section, and you gotta imagine this surreal image. When you look into this section on the left-hand side, you see a pile of loose books on the ground. Because these guys have like what is called the library, which is a bunch of books that they like rip in half. So one guy can read the first half, this other guy can read the other half. There's this pile of books and there's flames coming off the books like 3 feet high. The books are on fire.
Oh my God.
On the other side, the cell door. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then just fucking the guy in there so giddy about it. So sorry. Go ahead.
Remember, it was inmate Rivera, and Sean and I got along really well with Rivera. He was funny. He was easygoing. He was at hardcore SDG, but he's cool with us. And he's in there and he's got like half of his face covered with like a pillowcase, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think he almost looks like a fucking mummy because he's got his whole sheet around him for some reason.
Yeah, and he's dancing back and forth, kind of hopping in place, and all the other guys are leaning against their bars, looking out through the bars at us, like, what are these fuckers going to do now? And it's this surreal situation. It's like, wait a minute, that's a fire. It's like, holy shit, that's a fucking fire. Your training instantly kicks in, and you get on the radio, and you start calling for backup, and we have this thing called incident management system. So you get on the radio and there's an echo point. So you call, start asking for help that you have a fire.
Do you remember the wording? Cause like you were so nonchalant with how you did that. If you remember it, you should just like try and mimic it. Cause it was so funny.
Well, I know, you know, there's a particular call out, but I could not verbatim say, you know, remember exactly what I said, because you just kind of like, I won't say I got tunnel vision at that point, because it's like fight or flight, and I was definitely like, we got to handle this shit because people.
Okay, so non-verbatim, I just remember there's a fucking fire, right? So I'm thinking like, if I'm making this call out and be like, guys, there's a fire and you want a five, get over here fast or something, I would have like totally broken the mold. And you're just like, you want to control We need an A-team response to UNIT 5. There's a fire in Fox, and like that's it, right? It's just nonchalant. And I remember how nonchalant it was because I think some of the UNIT 1 guys got there first. And they just kept like walking in, like, "Hey, what's up, guys?" And you're like, "There's a fire," and they're like, "There's a fire? I thought it was a training or something." You were so casual about it.
Well, they always tell you, it's like when you do a call out, make sure you remain calm. You have to get the certain information across so people know what to bring to the response. So, okay, I'm going to do it right now as if I was calling out a fire.
All right.
You want to admin, you want a five? Go ahead, you want a five. I'm going to be activating IMS at this time. I have a fire active in Fox section. I'm going to need staff response into the staging area. Will be the conference room in the front of the building. Please notify medical and please notify the watch commander. Do you copy? We copy. Attention, UNIT units. There's a fire in UNIT 5. Now, if I had responded to my heart, I would have been like, "Jesus Christ, there's a fucking fire, man. People are going to fucking die." I can't do that. I've got to get that information out there, you know, so they know what to do and what to bring. And so, like, once you get the information out, there's almost like a sense of relief because you've got the information out, you know, people are coming, you know, the watch commander is going to come and like, you know, the whole entourage is going to show up any second. I remember, tell me what happened, because I know that we got the fire hose out. I think
so that was my favorite part. One of my least favorite coworkers of all time. I'm not even going to say sorry if you ever hear this, but least favorite coworkers of all time. You asked him to get the hose. He's fucking panicking so much that he like runs to the back. So like the whole building is really long. And so he runs all the way to the end where you need to open this door to get into what's called the catwalk to grab the hose. And then he doesn't remember that he doesn't have a key. So then he's fucking sprinting up the control room all the way to the other end to grab the keys. And he's fucking running back. And I just remember, like, well, there's not a whole lot we can do until we get a hose and or, like, the fire extinguisher. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember being, like, remotely, like, mostly entertained. Because I'm watching Rivera just, like, dancing, giddy, excited. I thought it was also important, Echo, the section right before it, remember that was flooded because some other guy in there was pissed off at us because of having too many level twos in the building and him getting stuck there forever. So right, that's fucking right. Flooding. Fox is on fire. This officer is sprinting up and down and up and down trying to get this hose, which I think we use the extinguisher first, right? And then we use we use the extinguisher first and we're like, oh, it's a little smoky. So then we get the hose out and douse it, and that created like copious amounts of smoke. Both sections at the end are just like completely covered in smoke. You don't remember that?
No, what I remember is, like you said, as soon as we hit that thing, well, first of all, with the big hose, not the extinguisher, but the big hose, soon as you hit that pile of books with the hose, it sent all the books into the cell with Rivera.
I feel like you might have aimed it that direction on purpose. Well,
you know, and I liked Rivera, you know, but
but he pissed us off that night.
Well, but do you remember why all of that happened?
Yeah, 100% I remember why that happened.
We'll get to that in a second, but I remember once that water hit that pile of books, that's when all of a sudden smoke became a real issue. I don't know why the fire itself did not create that much smoke, but once it got extinguished, oh my god, the smoke was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was affecting other sections, and other inmates were starting to complain about not being able to breathe and all this stuff, probably looking for a free payday, being able to sue. Then we got the exhaust fans on and it cleared up somewhat. There was a million people coming through that front door, and we got, I mean, literally there was like no damage to the building. It's all concrete and steel anyways.
Yeah.
He had taken apart the light fixture and then, you know, done sparks with the wires and got toilet paper to light
up. Which everyone does. Like if they keister anything and get anything to smoke, that's how you light it. So that's pretty normal.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the amazing thing about like why all this started is because, you know, you've got level twos in your building, and this is not a good situation for level twos. I mean, these guys, a lot of them are affiliated with some type of gang. A lot of them are in there for violent crimes, and they're waiting for a bed space where they normally would be housed, which is a secure environment with solid doors in another part of the UNS. What happened was, is the classification was backed up for whatever reason, and these guys were sitting in R&O for extended periods of time. And when they're in R&O, they can't order food commissary. They can only order letter writing and like hygiene and letter writing. That's it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
And so what happens is they want to go down to the other units and be able to order, like, you know, chips and candy and all the other crap they can get off commissary. So when you're keeping them there for 6-8 weeks, we would give them all jobs and they would run the section great because they got out of their cell more so than the standard hour a day when you're in R&O.
Which was actually, that was interesting time because it wasn't even 6 and 8 weeks. Like, some of those had been going on 3 months. And remember, level twos, STGs, any of that, they weren't allowed to have jobs. Like, we could only have the bare minimum, lowest threat inmates doing any of the jobs in the section or on the floor. And our captain, because we couldn't get rid of any of them, tried to deal with some of the issues with them being there so long by giving these level twos and some of the SDGs jobs, which they did
fine.
It wasn't a problem. Even that wasn't enough. They were so pissed off being there for so long.
Well, so what happened was, I don't know if you remember this, but it was like either that day or the previous day. I think it was that day.
Yeah.
That another staff was instructed by the captain, you can't use level twos, go down and fire them all.
Well, I think they had finally broken the dam and they were starting to get a few of the inmates out, because I think we had too many people in the prison overall, and then just the other units weren't willing to accept some of the STGs and level twos we had. So yeah, I know it had calmed down, and then yeah, Rivera got fired.
Right. Rivera got fired. He was pissed, and that's why he decided that, okay, well, I'm burning this fucking place down. And the thing is once we finally pull him out of the cell, we cuff him up, we start extracting all the inmates out of the section. You know, Rivera was really like, I'm sorry, look, I'm sorry, Sean, sorry, DeWolf. I hate to do this, but this is bullshit. I'm tired of being here. And then now I can't work. it was frustrating because we got along with him. He was always mellow. Yeah.
Yeah. I still like him more than our captain. So,
well, you know, we had a very unusual captain at that time, and God bless him. He's retired as well. Do you remember
you and I are sitting in your office one night, and he comes in because he decided to stay late, and like, he hadn't seen either of us in forever, and I had grown long hair, and he was always uncomfortable with me being gay, right? And so he walks in there, and he's like, he looks at both of us, and then he decides to strike up some conversation about movie. And he's like, hey, Mark, do you remember that movie from the, like, I don't know when, about faggots and hippies? What the fuck? Well, and I don't remember your response, but I'm sure it was a smart-ass response. But yeah, he just was not the most open-minded individual.
He was very socially awkward.
Yes.
He was very socially awkward. But okay, so you bring up another story, and it's funny how we're going to get away from inmates, and the best stories are always staff. I'm not going to say who, what, where, when, how, why, but I will tell the details about a conversation. Is we had this one lieutenant who was a hardcore Marine. God bless him. He would always try so hard to socialize with staff and be like that lieutenant that you love. Like, I'm here for you if you need anything, you know, my door is always open. And he'd come in and he's like, so did you, he looks right at me and he's like, so did you see the Tonys the other night? And I look at him and I'm like, why would you ask me if I saw the Tonys? And I said, is it because I'm gay? And I looked at him, I said, let my people go, Lieutenant. I mean, do you think that I just sit around saying, there's no business like show business. There's no business I know. And I remember, like, I don't know if you were in the room, Sean, or who was in the room, but they just busted up laughing. And the lieutenant just did not know how to respond. He felt so awkward. And he's sitting there and he goes, and he doesn't know what to say. And so he turns and he leaves. And we all just started laughing. But you could just tell when he comes in the room and he sees me, he had that pucker factor. He just didn't know how to interact. It's like, fuck, relax, man. Just because I'm gay doesn't mean I don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And, but that was a great, great time with that lieutenant. I don't know. I always really liked him, but he was just fun to tease. And he tried so hard to connect. And it's like, just be yourself, buddy. Relax.
Yeah. I never really had any problems with our lieutenants there. Just our captain's interesting.
Yeah, he was a character. So there's another story that prior to our chat today that you had brought up. I'm going to let you tell that story because you remember more details about our little friend that came in late at night. I don't know if it was mental illness. I don't know if he was high. I don't know what his deal is. So would you mind telling that story?
Yeah, I can go. I believe he was coming off of something, which makes sense. But so Mark's already mentioned the fact that this whole building, it's just bars and you can hear anything. If someone's screaming on one end and the other, you can hear it. And for the most part, most of the guys in there, they just want to do their time, get out, which includes just sleeping and getting through another fucking day, right? This guy comes in. I don't think I can do the pterodactyl noise justice. But all of a sudden, he's just going, and we're like, what the fuck? And so the inmates are like, what the fuck is that? And he just screams back, I believe, like, it's a pterodactyl noise. And he goes, screaming again. And so he's just fucking riling up the whole building. Like, no one can sleep. People are screaming at each other. And we're like, there's literally just bars. It's not that safe. People will start breaking stuff to burn shit. People will start beating up cellmates in some cases just to fucking get something going because they're so pissed off of what's going on. So you're just like, this guy's coming down hard off of something. He needs to get out of here. So you call the shift commander and late night moves, for whatever reason, are just generally a no-go in the prison. There's extra paperwork. You have to have a report. There has to be reasoning for it. So you're on the phone with the shift commander saying, we got to get this guy out of here. And I remember him asking why. And you're like, he thinks he's a pterodactyl. And I remember the shift commander going like, why the fuck would that mean someone needs to leave your building, deal with it? And you go, you don't understand. He's riling everyone up like we're borderline ready to have them start rioting. And he's like, well, what is he saying? And I remember you go, well, he's making a pterodactyl noise. He's going, bah! And you do it like kind of softly, but a little bit loud. And he goes, he's doing what? And all of a sudden from the background, you hear, that's not it. You're not doing it right. It's, or fucking whatever, and the shift commander's like, what the fuck was that? And you're like, that's the fucking pterodactyl noise that's gonna make us have a riot. And he's like, oh my god, I'll be right there. And so he comes down, he's just being, then he sees the inmate, he's being obnoxious, so yeah, he gets another unit over there, SWAT I think, because they have to do the transfer. And I just remember them taking him out of the cell. And he's on the way out of the building, just making that noise, screaming. And literally, the inmates in every section are just applauding straight, like, thank God, cheering, rooting that he's the fuck out of there. And
well, yeah, I remember like the whole time that the guy's screaming. And then I don't know if you remember the second time we went down there, he was naked. And I'm like, why are you fucking naked?
And I don't remember the naked part. I just remember the screaming part. But, you know, like he was fucking coming off of something.
That's good. The one thing I do remember, Sean, is him being naked.
Really? That guy?
It was opportunity, Sean.
Yeah,
opportunity.
There you go.
Middle of the shift, I finally woke up because I had a naked man in front of me. But yeah.
Never again. Bang, bang.
I got to say that to close out the story about Rivera with what happened with the fire is I did have to go to court on that. I don't know if you remember that part, but it was, you know, they ended up charging him. And I had to go to court in West Jordan, Utah. And I went in and they bring in Rivera and he's sitting there and his defense attorney is questioning me about what I witnessed that night. I remember I kept smiling because Rivera just had this great contagious smile. He just had a really, really great smile, kind of like the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland. And he made me laugh on the stand. And she's like, why are you laughing or why are you smiling? I said, because I like the guy. I mean, I get along with him really well. And like the whole court is kind of silent looking at me like, why does this guy get along with this inmate? It's like, I have nothing personal against these guys. I'm there to keep them out of trouble. I'm not the judge and jury when somebody comes into the prison. I'm there to manage them and keep them out of trouble. And I really liked Rivera. You know, you just don't know the potential somebody has, because kind of the footnote of this whole situation is that after he'd gotten out of the Uintas and he finally ended up in the Okers, which is closer to general population. I don't know. Is Okers considered general population or
a kind little of less, parts of it
less, are. Less restrictive anyways than the Uintas. But March 14th, 2016, he got in an altercation with another inmate and he killed him and he stomped the guy's head like 70 times. And so it killed this other inmate and it was all, I guess, caught on video. What, you just never know who you're working with.
Yeah, no. Well, I think that could be like a whole nother long multi-series episode for you. It's like, I mean, basically everyone in that system has some type of psychological disorder, ranging from like just borderline personality, like up to everywhere. So it's, you know, it's
no, you're
mental health, man. It's
right.
I just have to say, because you brought this up, you know, I think one of the things I most respected and liked working about with you and is that mentality that, you know, you're not the judge and the jury. You know, there was a time when I was, you know, you asked me earlier about like, why was I there? Desperation. But there was a short period where I thought, you know, maybe I could make a career out of this. And I think the amount of officers there that did get a kick out of, in my opinion, being the judge and jury was way too many. That just wasn't something I'm interested in. You know, our job was to just basically keep the peace and let these guys serve their time. And I think too often you dealt with people that thought it was their job to make their lives as miserable as possible. And I didn't want anything to do with that.
Nothing's worse than working with somebody that likes to stir the guys up, because it's, you know, so many people have been assaulted and it's not the one who stirred them up that got assaulted. It's the poor bastard who walks in after the fact.
Well, I just remember that exactly, because the fire, I remember Rivera dancing there, staring at us, saying, "It's not about you guys. I hate your captain." And I remember just yelling at him, like, "He's not fucking here. Like,
right.
He's not dealing with this shit, you fuck." Like, I was so irritated.
No, he's mad because it's like, I'm tired of being here. And the only thing that I had to look forward to was working. And your fucking captain took that away from me. Sorry, guys. I had to do this.
So. Yep.
And, you know, so it was, I think as I look back, I think that it was one of the highlights, probably the highlight of 20 years for me. I look back at that night. I love the way that we handled it. Nobody got hurt, really. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And it was a lot of fun. And boy, it was just such a fast night. The adrenaline was flying that night. It was great.
All right. And it actually cleaned up our building because Rivera got out, which was kind of sad even after the fire because they liked him. But that fucking guy that flooded his cell in Echo Section fucking hated that guy. And he decided he was going to try and take down one of the big officers. Is they got him out of his cell. There's like inches of water in that section. And he just lets his knees go to see if he can get, you know, probably the one I'm talking about, the big motherfucker that was like down in Uintah like 2 or whatever. I remember him like leaning back with the pressure of the cuffs and then just saying like, fuck this. And he like straight like bowling ball threw this guy forward. And I remember him shooting out like hydroplaning between the bars out of the section. And I'm not advocating for violence. Like, I'm not big on violence, but that fucking inmate was trying to hurt someone. And I just remember him, like, flying out of the section, hydroplaning on water. And that was slightly entertaining. But just because he was a fucking asshole. And trying to hurt, intentionally trying to hurt an officer.
It's, I know that there's such a potential for violence. And a lot of people, you can increase your life expectancy if you go into that job and you don't start shit with those people. I mean, certainly there's going to be situations that you have to handle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got to basically go in and do the job. But don't go in and try to agitate these guys, because it's just, it's not gonna end well sooner or later, either for you or for some other officer.
Yep.
Well, Sean, that concludes our episode. If there are any final thoughts that you wanted to say about your time at the state prison in Utah?
not a thing. It was fun working with you, and that is all I have to say about my time there.
Well, no, we had an absolute blast, and you know, I know that there's more stories that we could share, but you know, a lot of the times it had nothing to do with the inmates. It really had nothing to do with the job. I mean, we're sitting around and we're laughing at just random stuff, and it was just a lot of fun. You made the time pass by so fast. I really appreciate not only the fact that we got to work together, but we remain friends to this day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. No matter where you are, what time it is, I always appreciate you listening to the Gay Florida Man podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I want to let you know Gay Florida Man is now on Instagram, so make sure you look it up. There'll be some notes and details about the different episodes, maybe even some behind-the-scenes pictures about some of the stories that we talk about. So until next time, be safe and make good choices.